Today on 360 North, enjoy day two of Celebration 2012. This three-day event highlights Southeast Alaska Native culture, customs, and performance. Beginning at 9 this morning and Saturday, Celebration continues all day and late into the evening. You won't want to miss this rich live festival organized by the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and found only on 360 North. Take advantage of our live broadcast and our live webcast. That's today, tonight, and tomorrow on 360 North.
Learn the language of the land at the University of Alaska Southeast. UAS offers classes in Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian. Fall 2012 classes include Introduction to Tlingit, Tlingit for the Family and Home, and Apprenticeships in Alaska Native Languages. More information or to sign up for classes, check out the UAS website at uas.alaska.edu or call 796-6100. Enroll today. Change the world.
Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Friday the 8th of June, New Year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. We will talk with Sarah Ray and Kevin Meyer about the upcoming Association for the Study of Literature and Environment Conference. Learn about tonight's Relay for Life, and we'll also hear writers, almanac, music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. For the forecast for tonight, rain showers likely low temperatures around 44 degrees, variable mostly southwest winds to 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable later on. Decreasing clouds expected for Saturday. Looks like cloudy weather expected for Sunday with a chance of rain.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A South Dakota tribal official has been convicted of domestic violence. Under new sentencing guidelines, the man could see harsher penalties. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Kelly St. John is a district representative on the Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Council. The reservation straddles the South Dakota-North Dakota border. St. John has been convicted by a federal grand jury of habitual domestic assault. According to U.S. Attorney Brenda Johnson, St. John was involved in an assault in July of last year on the reservation. St. John has been convicted twice in federal court on domestic assault charges. Because of the previous cases, Johnson says the conviction falls under a new federal statute. The new benchmark punishes acts of domestic violence where an accused person has two similar prior convictions in federal, state, or tribal courts. St. John could receive a 10-year prison sentence and $250,000 fine when he's sentenced in September. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Leaders and citizens from five tribes in Oklahoma are meeting today to develop strategies to address common issues they face. KCNP's Brian Brazier has more.
For more than 60 years, the leaders of the Chickasaw, Choctaw, Cherokee, Seminole, and Muscogee Creek nations have joined in discussions of issues, programs, and policies affecting their people. With three of the five tribes experiencing changes in leadership recently, the full council hasn't met routinely in a few years. The five tribal leaders decided it was time to reconvene this important group, and they chose Muscogee Creek Nation Principal Chief George Tiger as the new council president. Chief Tiger outlined some of the main issues the council and committees will address this session.
The recent defeat of finding the funding by the state of Oklahoma for American Indian Cultural Center and Museum. We're looking at maybe some type of strategy where we can help in those areas. Of course, you're always looking at how we can increase funding for the programs that we have.
The five tribes' intertribal council committees began meeting yesterday. The full council will convene this afternoon at the Riverwind Casino in the Chickasaw Nation. Reporting for National Native News, I'm Brian Brazier.
Tribal leaders are meeting with New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez and her cabinet members at an annual tribal state summit. The meeting is taking place today in southern New Mexico at the Mescalero Apache Tribe's casino. Navajo, Apache, and Pueblo leaders are expected to address issues like education, water rights, and economic development. A 2009 state law requires an annual meeting with the governor and tribal leaders. There are 22 tribes in the state. Indian Trust meetings are scheduled to be held in Albuquerque, New Mexico next week. According to the U.S. Department of the Interior, the Secretarial Commission on Indian Trust Administration and Reform will take place Monday and Tuesday. The meeting will include 5 members of the commission, including tribal and federal officials. The commission is charged with giving recommendations to the Interior Secretary on how to improve the department's Indian trust management and administration. The meetings and reform follow the nearly $4 billion historic individual Indian trust settlement by the government and 500,000 plaintiffs over the mismanagement of royalties. U.S. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski is requesting a hearing on legislation to name the National Park Service Talkeetna Ranger Station in honor of an Athabascan man. Thursday marked the 99th anniversary of Walter Harper's ascent of Denali. He was the first man to summit Denali, the highest peak in North America. Murkowski introduced legislation in March to honor him with the name change. The Talkeetna Ranger Station is home to the Denali National Park's mountaineering rangers and a mandatory stop for anyone planning to climb the peak. Murkowski has requested a hearing on the bill before the National Parks Subcommittee for later this month. During this month annually, motorcycle enthusiasts from across the Navajo Nation take part in the Long Run Motorcycle Ride to the Bosque Redondo Memorial located at Fort Sumner, New Mexico. The event was started a few years ago to help commemorate the Navajo Long Walk. Navajo people were removed from their homelands in the 1800s and forced by the U.S. Army to march hundreds of miles to the fort. This year's motorcycle run starts from Kirtland, New Mexico, and ends at the memorial. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
The time is 3:06 and you are attuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guests are Sarah Ray and Kevin Meyer, both members of the UAS English faculty, here to talk about the AASLE conference, which is happening June 14th through the 17th. Kevin and Sarah, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
Thanks.
So my first question is, what the heck is ASLE?
ASLE stands for the Association for the Study of Literature and Environment, and it's a national and even international organization with international affiliates as well that puts together conferences every other year, big conferences, but occasionally supports off-year symposia, which is what this is. And Kevin and I maybe stupidly volunteered to try to host one here in Juneau at UAS because for a variety of reasons, mainly because we have a literature and environment emphasis in our BA that Kevin can talk about in a few minutes. We planned the symposia, pitched it to ASLE, which is what they call themselves, and they agreed, and we have the membership coming for a big academic conference, about 100, 110 people coming to Juneau on Wednesday and Thursday through Sunday.
What's the focus of the organization?
The focus of the organization is environmental literary studies, also creative writing that has to do with the natural world. But it likes to see itself as crossing disciplines with the sciences, with the social sciences. It likes to see itself as interdisciplinary, but it's mainly focused on literature and environment.
Is it a journey into academia?
Yeah. What did you say?
Is it a journey into academia?
Oh, it's definitely academic.
Yeah.
some of the creative writers might balance this out a little bit very nicely, though.
Right, but it's largely a group of English professors interested in reading literary texts or reading any texts, really, advertisements, cultural production, for their environmental import, or what kind of messages they're telling us about how humans ought to interact with the natural world, for instance, or the larger kind of cultural politics of environmentalism. So definitely academic. The 100 or so people who are coming to Juneau, 120 actually, are mostly English professors, though they're people from, as Sarah mentioned, from the social sciences and a handful of creative writers, too. So,
are they educators in the high school, college level? Or?
Yeah, almost all of them are university professors, and this is where we get together once a year and kind of figure out what the latest ideas are and what's going on in the field of literature and environment studies. So,
how did the idea for a conference come about in the first place?
Well, as Sarah mentioned, we have we have an English BA, a Bachelor of Arts degree in English, out at UAS. It's and within that we have an emphasis in literature and environment. Increasingly, graduate programs have these emphasis areas, but we think, we're not totally sure at this point, but when we started it anyway in 2006, we were the first, and we may still be the only university in the U.S. anyway that has an undergraduate emphasis in literature and environment. So Sarah and I were talking about how we could go about publicizing that, how we could go about, you know, getting that into the, getting our BA into the kind of disciplinary conversation, and it sounded like bringing 100 people here would be a good way for other faculty members to know what we're doing here in Juneau. So,
what qualifies as literature?
Anything counts.
Anything counts. Your shirt would even count. We could read your shirt here if we wanted to.
Aloha shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah. What counts as literature? Is that what you're saying? Mm-hmm. Well, this is always ongoing debate within the field, actually. Traditionally, the field of literature and environment has looked mostly at nonfiction. You can think about Edward Abbey or even somebody like Paul Thoreau, but Henry David Thoreau was sort of considered the beginning grandfather of literary environmentalism. But increasingly, folks are starting to think that we need to broaden that definition to include all kinds of genres of literature, all kinds of cultural production, and a new sort of burgeoning field within environmental literary studies is film and media studies, too. So that's kind of exciting. I think a lot of times people think that media is sort of anti-environmental. When you go out into nature, you want to turn off your iPhones and iPads. But there's certainly a lot of cutting-edge criticism happening, thinking about how media creates or fashions or shapes our relationship to the environment in good and bad ways. So we're having a bunch of people coming who are talking about that kind of things too. And in fact, one of the speakers who we're having, which we'll talk about more so in a minute, is Ellen Frankenstein. We'll screen her film, Eating Alaska, which is a documentary about food in Alaska and sustainability and ethics and environmental justice issues. And she's doing film, and of course there's this whole movement within the field to think about film critically, so that'll be really fun.
Do you ask yourself questions like, if a tree falls in the forest, is there anyone around
all
to
the time,
report
yeah.
it?
Of course. That was just one of them.
What's the theme of this year's conference?
The theme of this year's conference, actually, we spent a lot of time thinking about this and asked the executive council of the organization what they thought about this. A lot of them had been part of Breadloaf that had been held here, and so they had experiences in Juneau thinking about creative writing and environmental literature here in Juneau in Southeast Alaska. And so we wanted to put together something that really highlighted the local, what's unique about this place, but also redefine that in ways that maybe people hadn't necessarily been thinking about before, and certainly not package Juneau in the same way that necessarily, as we're looking out at the cruise ships through your window here, that a typical tourist would come here thinking about the environment and really think about the environment here critically. And so with a lot of discussion and thinking about this, we settled on the theme Environment, Culture, and Place in a Rapidly Changing North. And as you can imagine from the title, it's quite all-encompassing, but focuses in on thinking about the North, not just Juneau or Alaska even, as a transnational place that has connections with Canada, with places around the Arctic, and rethink geographically what it is to share this space of the North, what it means for people in Juneau, what it means for people in Alaska. And people from all over the U.S. are thinking about this, what's going on up there in Alaska in this rapidly changing North, what's happening there. Are people in Alaska experiencing the front lines of climate change more intensely than people in, let's say, Los Angeles or something, and in what ways, and what does that feel like, and what kind of ethical questions does that raise? So that was the sort of impetus for the theme, to think about Alaska within this broader context that maybe most people aren't thinking about Alaska.
You mentioned some of the well-known names in literature and the environment, Edward Abbey and Henry David Thoreau. Who are the Alaskan voices that are out there that is waiting to be heard in a broader sense?
That's a great question. As a scholar and not a creative writer, it's hard for me to answer that question, but I'll, of course, pitch our colleague Emily Wall, who's going to be speaking at the conference, and we have Nancy Lord coming, and maybe Kevin can speak to that even more.
Yeah, and Ernestine Hayes, I think. one of the things that the discipline of literature and environment studies is trying to do, as Sarah mentioned earlier, is broaden the horizons and think about the environmental impact or the environmental import of all kinds of different texts. So we may not necessarily think of Ernestine Hayes' book, Blonde Indian, as necessarily environmental, but embedded in that is an ethic of place in her book, or embedded in her whole kind of worldview is a really strong ethic of place, and thinking, you know, even about celebration that's going on across the street. And so I would definitely add those names. I think, you know, the more traditional ones, there are a number of papers on not only Nancy Lord's work, but on John Muir, right? A very traditional kind of outsider coming who's written about Alaska.
Jack London.
Those names appear in the program.
Barry Lopez.
Yeah, Barry Lopez as well. I think there might be a paper that deals with Seth Kantner's Ordinary Wolves, and I think there's a little bit on Nick Jans as well. People are beginning to think critically about Alaska writers, but the Academy is a very slow place. We're slow to pick up, you know, the trends, and, you know, I mostly write about early 20th century literature, and a lot of my colleagues write about things that are much older than that. It's harder to write about contemporary literature, partly because the people are still around and they can tell you that you're wrong. And so it's always easier to focus on, speaking from my own experience anyway, it's easier to focus on older stuff and try and historicize it and think carefully about different eras.
And I also want to elaborate on Kevin's comment about broadening what counts as a text, and think about, we made an effort to attract Canadian scholars and writers to not being Canadian scholars and writers. It was a little bit difficult to figure out what were all the venues to send our call for papers out to, but we made a pretty good effort, and we have our keynote speaker is from Canada, and she's going to be speaking about, and Kevin can speak about the speakers more specifically in a minute, but Julie Cruikshank is coming from UBC, and she's going to be speaking about Indigenous knowledge, and in a particular book that she wrote called Do Glaciers Listen? Local Knowledge, Colonial Encounters, and Social Imagination. So as a result of this effort, we have also people writing about and producing literature in Canada, which is kind of neat to think about, again, this effort to move beyond Alaska, but situate Alaska. So that's also mm-hmm. helpful. It's Canadian folks and Canadian writers and people writing about Canadian literature, too.
So that's one of the facets of the conference, is for people to submit papers?
Yeah, we had a call for papers we sent out about a year ago, I think, and the deadline was November 5th, and we put together a program of about, I guess it's about 100 people or 95 people, with the submissions that came in from that.
And what happens to these papers?
The people are told that they can present their papers, and they get on an airplane, which of course is not very environmental, which is an ongoing debate, and come here and present them in about 15 minutes on panels of about three or four people that are that have similar paper titles, paper content or themes, and have discussion with people in the audience, whoever's attending. Does that mm-hmm. answer your question? Yeah.
And you talked about the keynote speaker and the plenary speaker. Do you want to go over them, please?
Yeah,
absolutely. So this is the one element that we really want to pitch here, is that the keynote and plenary speakers are where we'd like folks in the community of Juno to come out and hear what's going on, but also to ask questions and to help them think about what's going on here in Juno and in Southeast Alaska. And Sarah already mentioned the keynote speaker, and that's Julie Cruikshank from the University of British Columbia. They're all early in the morning, which is maybe good and maybe not for people who work, but the first speaker, Julie Cruikshank, will be on Thursday, June 14th, starting at 8 a.m. in the Egan Library.
It is early.
There'll be the usual sort of series of introductions, so if you can't get there till 8:30, you'd probably still be okay. So pretty much every day at 8:30 after that, we have the plenary or the keynote as the leading off the day and sort of framing the discussion. So we've kind of already gone through the names, but Ellen Frankenstein will be screening her film Eating Alaska. If you haven't had a chance to see that yet, it's a good kind of lighthearted look at how to eat and how to eat ethically in Southeast in particular. She's from Sitka. That's at 8:30 on Friday morning, the 15th. And then on Saturday, we have Nancy Lord, who I believe may still be the writer laureate, or if she's not, she's just recently passed the crown to someone else. She's from Homer. She recently published a book called Early Warming, Crisis and Response in the Climate Change to North. She's been publishing books for the last 20 years, and mainly Alaska-themed, but now she's thinking really carefully about climate change, and we thought she'd be a perfect speaker to address our conference themes. And so she's speaking Saturday morning at 8:30 a.m. That's also in the library. And then finally, we're really happy to have our own colleague and friend, Ernestine Hayes, talking on Sunday morning, and her title, I forgot to mention the titles of the other speakers, I'll go back in a second, but Ernestine's title is What Shall We Do With Our Histories? Ernestine, again, we're sort of kind of cornering her and getting her to think carefully about environmental issues, and I think she's always critical of the mainstream environmental movement, and that's what I think is really exciting about a conference like this, is that you get to think differently about what constitutes environmentalism and what constitutes a sort of deep understanding of place. And Ernestine, I imagine her as the voice behind me all the time, reminding me, wait, think about this, did you think about that? So Ernestine will hopefully frame the conversation on Sunday. That's at 8:30 again, and in the library event space. So we really hope you can come out to those. Again, it's Julie Cruikshank, and her title is Listening for Different Stories, Indigenous Knowledge and Its Transformations in a Rapidly Changing North. That's Thursday at 8 a.m. Ellen will screen her film Eating Alaska. Ellen Frankenstein will screen her film Eating Alaska on Friday at 8:30. Nancy Lord's title on Saturday at 8:30 is Stories from the Warming North. And again, Ernestine on Sunday, Ernestine Hayes, What Shall We Do With Our Histories? So that's where we'd really like to see, you know, the community of Juneau come out and engage in the conversation.
So the bulk of the conference is not open to the general public, but the speakers are for sure?
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah. And part of the reason we'd imagined having more space for there to be public participation, but we got an overwhelming response. We were anticipating having 50 or 60 people, and as Sarah said, we have over 100 coming. And the classrooms just don't accommodate that many people. And I think that the plenaries and the keynotes will be of the most interest, right? They're the more sustained kind of 45-minute, hour-long presentations followed by long discussions. So, yeah.
And they're all located in the Egan Library in the main space.
Yeah, in the library, in the main event space.
Except
yeah.
for Alan Frankenstein's will be in the main lecture hall, which is Egan 112 downstairs.
Right. About how long are the presentations?
About an hour and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, which some of that time will be reserved for discussion. I would imagine about half an hour in each of those cases, or 20 minutes. So.
I took a look at your website. Do you want to remind our listeners about the website address, please?
Sure.
The website for ASLE, which is the association that we're hosting this conference for, is www.asle.org, and I encourage you to check out the organization and to learn more about what they're about. But the website for this specific symposium that we're hosting next week is www.uas.alaska.edu/ASLE. And that will take you to more descriptions of the plenary talks, the speakers. You can actually download a PDF of the final program and see more about the impetus and the inspiration for the concept of the environment, culture, and place in a rapidly changing North, as well as the call for papers is still up there, too, so you can see what we sent out. Something else that we should also say is that the bookstore, the UAS bookstore over there by Squire's Rest in Auk Bay, will be selling books by the plenaries and the speakers for a little while, having a little bit more stock to sell those books. And Sarah Hagen also will have sell books at the conference too, if people are interested in actually purchasing books from these authors and speakers.
I'm talking with Kevin Meyer and Sarah Ray from the UAS English faculty about the ASLE conference, which is the Association for the Study of Literature and the Environment, June 14th through the 17th next week, starting on Wednesday. One of your tabs on your website talked about sustainability in the conference. You want to mention that, please?
Sure, I can speak to that. So as the title of the organization suggests, this is we're thinking carefully about how to have a smaller impact on the planet, and so we like to pride ourselves in doing everything we can. Again, hopping on an airplane and flying to Juneau is not only very expensive, as everyone here knows, but it also you know, comes with a pretty significant carbon footprint. So we try to do a number of things on campus and to just make the event as green as possible. And we thought it was also a moment to highlight some of the work that we've been doing on campus for greening everything that we do out there. So I happen to also be the chair of the UAS Sustainability Committee. We've been working with Nana Services, who runs the cafeteria on campus, to use biodegradable containers to kind of move away from the disposable throwaway style of dining toward a more kind of sustainable real plates, real silverware, and again, if you are getting things to go, biodegradable containers. But beyond that, we've been doing bigger things, like turning the thermostat down a little bit. I know in the May we just had, that probably wasn't a particularly popular decision, but we've been trying to push people to think carefully about energy use and just the larger carbon footprint. So for the conference, for instance, rather than running a whole bunch of individual shuttle vans back and forth, we're really encouraging the attendees to ride the bus. I just was at A&P picking up a couple rolls of bus tokens. We're going to pass them out to the conference attendees and show them how to do it, right? Trying to get past these kind of behavioral barriers to doing things that just make more sense for the environment. So
it's interesting you should mention that, because Pat Moore, who co-hosts the show with me, putting together a series of programs on sustainability that will air in future programs at on 7 o'clock on Thursday night, so that's coming up in the future. But sustainability is an important topic.
Yeah, oh, that's great.
And you want to go over the speakers again for the people who might have missed those?
Sure.
And the times and dates?
Yeah, so again, it's the conference dates are June 14th to the 17th. The public components to the conference will happen in the morning. They're at 8 a.m. on Thursday. Julie Cruikshank, who's a professor of anthropology at the University of British Columbia, her talk is entitled Listening for Different Stories, Indigenous Knowledge and Its Transformations in a Rapidly Changing North. Friday morning's speaker, Ellen Frankenstein, a filmmaker from Sitka, will screen her wonderful film Eating Alaska, and there'll be a time for some discussion of that. That's actually in the lecture hall rather than in the library. All the rest of them are in the library. Saturday's keynote speaker is Nancy Lord, Alaska's writer laureate, who hails from Homer. Her title is Stories from the Warming North. And then on Sunday, Juneau's own Ernestine Hayes will give a talk and a reading entitled What Shall We Do With Our Histories? That's at 8:30 on Sunday morning in the Egan Library.
And you can also go to the website to remind yourself of those dates and times and descriptions, www.uas.alaska.edu/ASLE.
All right, Sarah Ray and Kevin Meyer, thank you for coming down to the station and talking about the conference. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I guess we could take this moment to thank the Chancellor for his generous support of the event, and thank all the volunteers. We're finally there. It's been a big production, so thank you, and thanks for having us, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff.
It's up. up to you. Ocean's wave is rumbling,
from this planet Earth,
with voices from the sea waves,
from this planet Earth.
Water's for the drinking,
from this planet Earth.
Beluga whales are singing,
help this planet Earth.
It's up to you. Right now is when we're needed. We can all do something. The young, the old, together. 'Cause the more we get together, the more we help this planet Earth. So come on, United Nations.
Help this planet.
Children of one mother,
help this planet Earth.
With love for one another,
yeah. Help this planet Earth.
For our sons and daughters' future,
help this planet Earth
to stay. Ever green, ever blue, as it was in the beginning. We've got to see it through. It's up to you.
Help this planet Earth.
It's ever green and ever blue.
Help this planet Earth.
It's up to me. It's up to you.
Help this planet Earth.
It's ever green and ever
help
blue.
Help this planet Earth.
It's up to me. It's up to you.
Help this planet Earth.
Ever green and
help
ever blue.
I'm Laurie Morton, Executive Director of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault in Alaska. 2 years ago, the Council surveyed women across Alaska. Because of the courageous women who share their experiences, the Alaska Victimization Survey paints a shocking portrait. 59 of every 100 Alaska women experience domestic violence, sexual assault, or both. Working together, we can be safe and free from domestic and sexual violence in our communities. Violence isn't a solution. Respect is always the right choice.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 8th of June, 2012. It was 150 years ago today, 1862, Emily Dickinson wrote a letter to Thomas Wentworth Higginson asking him to read her poems. He was a Unitarian minister. He was an essayist. He'd written an essay for the Atlantic Monthly called Letter to a Young Contributor, giving advice to aspiring writers. Emily Dickinson read that article and wrote to Higginson and asked if he would comment on her poems. We don't know what he wrote back to her, but we do know that she wrote to him, "Thank you for the surgery. It was not so painful as I supposed." And this began a correspondence that would last the rest of her life. He only met her twice. He advised her not to publish her poems. He thought they were too unconventional. But after she died, he co-edited 2 volumes of her work. He did edit them. He tried to standardize her punctuation, her grammar, which to us now seems a shameful thing. But his co-editor wanted to revise them even more. And Higginson said, "Let us alter as little as possible." It was on this date, 1867, Mark Twain set out on a trip to Europe and the Middle East. He was just starting out as a writer. He'd only published 1 book, The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. He was living in New York. He was working as a travel writer for the San Francisco Alta California and he told them that if they would fund his trip, he'd write 50 letters home for publication. And they agreed, so he set off on a steam-driven side-wheeler, Quaker City, with a big group of American tourists. Conventional travel books at the time talked about what you should see on your trip, but none of them talked about the nitty-gritty of taking a trip. So that's what Twain wrote about. He wrote about all the little annoyances and about culture shock. And then he came home and he took 6 months to convert his newspaper columns into a 600-page book, The Innocents Abroad, or The New Pilgrim's Progress. Mark Twain wrote, "In Paris, they just simply opened their eyes and stared when we spoke to them in French. We never did succeed in making those idiots understand their own language." He wrote, "As far as I can see, Italy for 1,500 years has turned all her energies, all her finances, and all her industry to the building up of a vast array of wonderful church edifices and starving half her citizens to accomplish it. She is today one vast museum of magnificence and misery." Innocents Abroad was Mark Twain's best-selling book in his lifetime. It was one of the best-selling travel books of all time. Here's a poem for today by Linda Paston, entitled Emily Dickinson. We think of her hidden in a white dress among the folded linens and sachets of well-kept cupboards, or just out of sight, sending jellies and notes with no address to all the wondering Amherst neighbors, eccentric as New England weather, the stiff wind of her mind, stinging or gentle, blew two half-imagined lovers off. Yet legend won't explain the sheer sanity of vision, the serious mischief of language, the economy of pain. Emily Dickinson, a poem by Linda Paston from PMAM New and Selected Poems, published by W.W. Norton and Company, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. And by CenturyLink, linking Americans and Fortune 500 companies to what matters most. Learn more at CenturyLink.com. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:26, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon, where our next guests are here to talk about the Relay for Life, starting at 6 p.m. tonight at Riverbend Elementary. Christina Windham, and also Larissa Willard. Thank you for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
First of all, tell us a little bit about the American Cancer Society, Larissa.
Sure. My name is Larissa Blar. I'm with the American Cancer Society. I'm actually at the Anchorage office, but I'm Juneau's staff partner. So the relay event, I guess the history behind it was started in 1985 by Dr. Gordy Klatt, and he was a colorectal surgeon out of Tacoma, Washington, and he started with just doing a 24-hour run. He was a marathon runner, so he just tried to get friends and patients and colleagues to kind of help donate to a cause, because he was looking for a way to eventually looking for a cure for cancer. So that's how we got the community involved, and it just grew from that. And now, Relay's in its 28th year this year. So that's kind of the background of the Relay for Life event. And it's not really, some people think you don't necessarily have to run the entire time. It's more of, I say it's more of a carnival feel. And you get a team together, you come out to Relay itself, there's people camp out. It's a really fun, activity for, kids, families, a variety of, just a good community event.
And if you haven't got a team yet together, there's still time?
Oh, yes, definitely. You can come on down, you can walk as an individual or as part of a team. So, yeah, definitely, either way.
So it's tonight at 6 o'clock. Christina and Nate, do you want to tell me about the event, please?
Well, this is the 16th year for here in Juneau, and it's also our best year. You know, we've raised a total of $82,000 so far this year, and we haven't even started yet, and it's just amazing. We've got 40 teams. The community's really stepped up to the plate and helped us out. We have a lot of businesses involved. We have an amazing variety of silent auction prizes, so you know, anybody from the public can come down and bid on those starting tonight at 7. We also have a survivor and caregiver lap. So if anybody, you know, that either has survived cancer or you've taken care of someone with cancer, you can come on down at 6. We have a special ceremony for you, a free T-shirt. You also get free dinner. And then we also have a lot of activities to keep people interested because it is a 24-hour fundraiser. And the idea is because cancer never sleeps. So the reason you get a team is you have someone from each team on the track all the time. And so there's a lot of people to keep the company, and Christina's job is to keep everybody awake.
Every hour on the hour, we're going to have different activities, different themes to dress up as. There's pirate theme, superhero theme, where you come dressed up as your favorite pirate, favorite superhero. And then we're going to play games like tug of war, musical chairs, limbo, and egg tosses, and just all sorts of fun. And it's going to last all night. We're going to pause at midnight for the luminaria service. And that's where we light luminarias around the track in honor of people that we've either lost from cancer or people that we know fighting it still. And that's my favorite part of the event.
Could you describe the luminarias, please?
The luminarias are just plastic bags that people decorate, and they put names on them. And then we put a candle inside it and set it all around the track. And light it all at once at midnight, and it's a pretty moving time of the event.
And your idea is to keep everybody awake at the same time?
That's my job. I'm trying to keep everybody awake. So
spirit points.
Yeah. each team, they can earn spirit points for participating in my activities, and at the end of the activity, or at the end of the event, Domino's donated us a gift certificate for the team that has the most spirit points.
Sounds fun. What other activities are there?
We're going to have the pet parade at 1 p.m. tomorrow on Saturday, and that's where teams bring their pets and they dress them up, and we'll parade them around the track. And we're going to play hot potato at 5 a.m. in your PJs, and play Simon Says at 7 a.m. I'm just going to keep you guys busy all day.
Yeah, and Christina's visiting us from Seattle. So she's been involved in Relay in the past, and she flew up this weekend.
Yeah, this is my fifth year volunteering.
And then how many participants do you have going right now?
I think we have 40 teams.
Yeah, 41.
And the teams vary in size from 5 to 10, maybe even 15 people.
And if you would like to take part, how do they do that?
They just show up, and we have a sign-up table, and you can sign up and donate and get a T-shirt. If you donate, you get a T-shirt. You don't have to donate to mm-hmm. show up, though. You can just show up and have a good time with us.
That's good. Anything you'd like to add?
Rain or shine, we're still going to relay. So we hope the rain doesn't keep people away.
We have a covered area, so even if it's raining still, we'll do the activities and just gather in the covered area.
I mean, living here, you should be used to the rain. So we're not going to let this stop us from our fundraising effort and try to have some fun.
Is there a website people can follow the activities on?
Oh, yeah. It's junorelay.org, and we try to update it when we can, and we're also on Facebook. So we'll be uploading photos on Facebook throughout the night. And, you know, like I said, midnight's one of our biggest in touching ceremonies, and, of course, opening and closing ceremony. So the public's welcome to come out anytime. And
just bring your ring gear.
Yeah.
Bring your extra tufts.
So you want to tell me a little bit more about the American Cancer Society?
Sure. Probably the most common question I get asked is where the money goes. Because the American Cancer Society is a national organization. So out of all the money that is raised, 40 of it is sent away nationally, where it's sent off to cancer research programs and things along that line. And then, but those programs and that cancer research, of course, affects the community in the long run, you know, with the variety of different drugs that we've helped fund research for. So And also, we're also very proud to say that 8%, there's only 8% of expenses are gone towards Relay, so the rest of it is, fundraised money, so if that makes sense. So, and some of the programs that are funded by the money that is raised at Relay, we have, for example, a Look Good, Feel Better program. I'm just thinking of a few off the top of my head, and that's for, women that have gone through chemo and radiation. So it's a program that licensed estheticians help put on, and it helps them, so they feel better about themselves with, whether it's wigs or prosthesis, and just kind of how to, just deal with their bodies changing and how to, again, so they'll look good and in turn feel better. We also have, a variety of cancer support groups. We have two programs, Reach to Recovery and Road to Recovery, and Road to Recovery is a transportation program that, for example, ERA is a really big sponsor for flying some of our patients to their cancer treatments and free of cost to them, and a really large discount to if they have somebody that's accompanying them.
I just wanted to add real quick, that's how my family got involved, is when my mom got diagnosed with cancer. She contacted American Cancer Society, and they helped pay for her hotel when she had to go to radiation down in Seattle, mm-hmm. and they helped her find a specialist.
Right.
And that's how we've been involved ever since.
Yeah, and the great thing, I'm glad you brought that up, is being part of a national organization is we do, I know Juno patients, for example, are sent to Seattle, if up by Anchorage, we have interior patients that are sent to Anchorage, but we have some housing available and hotels available in Seattle for patients that are sent from Juno to Seattle. So that's just another, another benefit of being part of a national organization. So, it just helps really great programs like that for patients to make their journey a little bit easier.
Nate, how did you become involved in the program?
Actually, I started about 17 years ago. I was doing an internship with an airline, and we decided to give everyone free tickets who participated in the relay. So I actually was one of the guys working the booth, and learned all about cancer because, being a young, naive high schooler, I thought, just women get breast cancer and that's it. And, I saw people who were kids, being pushed around this track. I learned about men who also got breast cancer and prostate cancer. And it just kind of hit home because cancer can really hit anytime, anywhere. And I really wanted to get involved. And so every year I try to do what I can. I try to get my employers involved. And like I said, I hope I don't become a statistic. Just because what we're hearing now is really scary, where one in two men in my age group are, they're suggesting that one in two men are going to get cancer, and they're saying one in three women get cancer. And these are really scary statistics, especially if you're, right around 30. I'd like to live a long life, and so I do what I can to raise money for the Cancer Society because they do help fund, some of these Nobel Prize-winning researchers to help find cures and find out why we're getting cancer. Is it something we're eating? Is it our environment? Just like the cancer study done in the 70s, they had no idea that smoking caused lung cancer. Nowadays, we don't even second guess, that's the main cause. And, it's really scary, especially here in Southeast. All these people, that we know of all ages, get it, and, people keep wondering why, and, my motivation is to, basically put this group out of business, let's find a cure.
You'd like to help with the effort, the Relay for Life and other associated activities with the American Cancer Society, go to River Bend Elementary School today at 6 p.m. for 24 hours, and join the people from the American Cancer Society and the Relay for Life organization for making the world a better place. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I think that about covers it. We just hope to see you all there.
Rain or shine, we'll be there.
And I just have one more question. If people can't make it to the event tonight, how can they contribute to American Cancer Society?
If you actually go, you can go to junorelay.org, and that's linked up to our national website, so they can go on there, and it says Donate Now is a button you can click, and it's easy as that.
All right. Thanks, Larissa.
Thank you.
And also Nate and Christina for coming by.
Thank you.
So at the interview, I'd like to play a song dedicated to my mom who passed away a little over 10 years ago of cancer. It's Robin Hopper.
When Johnny was young and he couldn't sleep, his mama would be right there.
She'd hold him in her loving arms and gently stroke his hair. She'd say, hold out your hand now and give him to me. She'd kiss each palm so tenderly. She'd close his fingers one by one, and softly she would say, take these kisses, hold on tight, make them last all through the night. Close your eyes and drift away to a place where worries cease, because love never falters and love never dies. And when I'm not with you to hear your cries, the kisses you're holding will bring you peace, until we are together again, until we are together again. Johnny grew to a fine young boy, so strong and true and bright. His mama heard him call to her one dark and wintry night. He said, Mama, I need you, I'm sick and afraid. She ran to his bedside till morning she stayed. She kissed his hands and rocked him to sleep. Softly she did say, take these kisses, hold on tight, make them last all through the night. Close your eyes and drift away to a place where worries cease, because love never falters and love never dies. And when I'm not with you to hear your cries, the kisses you're holding will bring you until we are together again, until we are together again. Johnny married and he had a son, and then there came a day. He said, Mama, I'm sorry, but the job offer came. We've got to move away. With a heart that was breaking, she looked in his eyes, afraid that it might be their final goodbye. He said, Mama, remember, and he held out his hand. She kissed each one and said, take these kisses, hold on tight, make them last all through the night. Close your eyes and drift away to a place where worries cease, because love never falters and love never dies. And when I'm not with you to hear your cries, the kisses you're holding will bring you peace, until we are together again, until we are together again. Years passed by and he got a call. His mama was very ill. He rushed back home and there she lay, so quiet and so still. And so ends the story of Mama. Her life on earth was done. But though her time was ended, her legacy had just begun. For in those final moments, as Johnny's teardrops fell, he kissed her hands and whispered those words he'd come to know so well. Take these kisses, hold on tight, make them last all through the night. Close your eyes and drift away to a place where worries cease, because love never falters and love never dies. And when I'm not with you to hear your cries, the kisses you're holding will bring you peace, until we are together again, until we are together again.
I go to my mom. I was Robin Hopper from her CD scrapbook. Time is 3:53 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Cheryl Levitt, station manager of the K3 radio station, here to talk about a new member-driven campaign.
Yeah, hi Jeff. Thanks for letting me come on this afternoon. Well, from now until the end of June, we are launching a special Member Get a Member campaign here at KTOO, KRNN, and KXLO. And the way that it works, for every member that brings in a new member, that member and the new member get a free gelato from Heritage Coffee Company downtown. And then for the members by the end of this month that have recruited the most new members, we've got really great prizes. The overall top recruiter will get an Italian feast for themselves and all of their new member recruits to enjoy together. They'll get tram tickets for themselves and all of their new member recruits. And then the top recruiter will also get a whale watch for two from Allen Marine, as well as some station swag. And then what we're offering is for any members that bring in 10 or more new recruits, we've got some special prizes. And if you bring in 5 or more new recruits, you get some extra special prizes. So basically, we've got lots of incentives for our current members to help bring in new members to the station.
And what's the mechanics of doing so?
Well, you can go to our website, and we've got a new member form there. If you're going out recruiting, you can just download and print the form and have your new members fill it out. The other thing you can do is have your new members just go to our website at k2news.org, and if they click on, we've got right in the center of our homepage, we have a big thing on the Member Get a Member campaign, and if you click on that, it takes them to a pledge page, and there's room there to specify which current member recruited them to become a member of the station.
Sounds like it's pretty much fun. Too bad I can't do it.
Well, you could recruit some people. Well, yeah, you could recruit people, Jeff, but you wouldn't qualify for the prizes, seeing as you are a staff person. That might not be totally fair, but I would encourage you to recruit people. And, you know, Jeff, I'd like to just explain a little bit why we're doing this and why the big emphasis on new members.
Mm-hmm.
So over the last couple of years, we have been working really hard to shorten the on-air drives, and we've been doing this just because of a number of comments over the years from people who let us know that they don't like the on-air pledge drives and they want more of the regular programming. So to accommodate that, we've been working to raise more of our money off-air through our mail campaign, through the quiet drive that we do, through online giving, through the sustainer program, the major donor program. But the result of having shorter on-air drives has meant that we've had fewer new people sign up on board, because it's during those pledge drives that we have the best opportunity to talk to our new members. So over the last 2 years that we've been doing the shorter campaigns, we've seen almost a 50% reduction in new members coming on board. And new members are important because, you know, every year we have certain budgetary needs that we have to meet. And as we look forward, actually, in the next couple months, we know that we are facing a cut in our state grant and also in our federal grant. And so as we look at the places where we can make up those shortfalls, membership is one of the important ways that we raise money. And so rather than always looking to the people who've given for many, many years and asking them to give more, we look for new people who listen to the service, enjoy it all the time, to step forward and make their gift. So that's why we're doing this big new member push in this month. And chances are we're going to be working on this throughout the whole year. But just this month through the end of June, there is special incentive for those of you who've never given and for those current members who would like to help recruit people. So, again, you can get all the details on this by going to k2news.org, right in the center of our homepage. We've got a really fancy graphic that Allison Caputo made for our Member Get a Member campaign. And, of course, you can always just get a hold of me at the station if you have some direct questions.
What qualifies as a new member?
Someone who has never given to the stations before, or if the last time you gave was 5 years or more. You know, let's see, what year are we in right now? We're in 2012. So if the last time you gave was 2007 or before that, you could come on board now as a new member.
All right, Cheryl Levitt-Snyder, thank you very much for coming down to the station and talking about the program.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Thank you.
Jessica Bielefleck from a brand new CD to the station, Duets. Time is 3:58 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcast on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sarsuna at 91.9. An excursion inland at Nicey Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. Also live online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up next Monday at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, Katie Bosser will be your host. She'll talk to Torin Ulrichsen about news and about how you can have lunch on a cruise ship and help Big Brothers Big Sisters at the same time. Learn about the new recycling program, reducing its hours at the landfill. And Marion Call will be here with a preview of her concert on Wednesday night at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Cafe and Theater. Ed Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music and More, next Monday 3 on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, cloudy skies becoming scattered early in the evening, then diminishing later on, low temperatures around 48 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, decreasing clouds with high temperatures around 58 degrees. Forecast for Sunday, looks like cloudy skies with a chance of rain. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau afternoon today. Have a great weekend and stay dry if you can.
Sector is doing fine. Where we're seeing weaknesses in our economy have to do with state and local government.
A presidential assessment this morning that was rescinded by the afternoon.
It's Friday, June 8th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.